It's the Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by ANZ Home Loans for financial well-beings.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Breakfast as we cover the very latest in property news across your weekend and hope that that is going well. And of course, we are heard on iHeartRadio this morning along with Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Amazon. And it's the 21st day for our Sunday of April 2024. And coming up, it's been another busy week. It always is. And it's always nice to have that inflection point looking back across the week. Some of those interviews, some of the leading comments, and they kicked off on Monday with Daniel Alexander there in Palm Beach. He was telling us all about the Southern Gold Coast. Asti Mardiasmo was also here looking at the second part of her Affordable Regional Areas report. Margaret Lomas and I discussed about just how hard it is to try and save for a deposit, and in most instances, $100,000 just simply is not enough. Matthew Hughes, now he's in Perth, he was talking about some negative numbers being reported, and we also spoke to Varsha Daswani in Queensland. So all of that is coming up next on our Sunday Real Estate Morning.
Navigate the world of real estate like a pro with expert insights, opinions and trends to up your game and knowledge when buying your next property.
Yeah, definitely. I think, the southern end is in history. It's been a little bit quieter than the rest of the Gold Coast, but it's not so much anymore, definitely. Growing popularity, lots of infrastructure growth, like you said, cranes in the sky, lots of newer units and high-rises and things being built, but still probably not as much supply as is needed because we've still got a lot of people, lots more buyers than sellers at the moment.
What is the most difference between the Southern Gold Coast and the Northern Gold Coast? So if somebody was asking that question, how could you break that down in terms of real estate and opportunities?
Tongue in cheek, I can just say the Southern Gold Coast is way better. No, it's probably not as busy. In the northern end, it's very busy. You've sort of got more activity happening, but the Southern Gold Coast is definitely growing. Like I said, lots of infrastructure growth. We've had a real influx over the last few years around new culture popping up. So, you know, restaurants and cafes and, you know, lots of options for entertainment and that sort of thing. Education, we've got universities on the southern end now. We've got the international airport on the southern end. There's more being put into transport. So it's really a growing area. I'm not sure if I mentioned earlier, but there's predicted population growth from about 600,000 on the Gold Coast now. In, I think it's 2046, they're predicting there'll be 1 million people. So there's lots of things happening. And it's just a really nice place to be. It's a little bit quieter than the northern end, but, you know, still plenty of action.
Yeah, you mentioned the airport, and if you sort of time it from the airport in terms of driving south, how much of a bonus has that airport been for the Southern Gold Coast? I would think quite dramatic, because if you're living there, and I remember this when I used to live in Southport in the northern end, it would sort of take me forever to get to the airport if the traffic was busy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I actually used to work with the airport before my time in real estate. And, you know, we talked about it being the gateway to the Gold Coast and huge factor for our tourism industry. They pride themselves on being able to jump on a plane and be in Sydney within, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours, as opposed to other areas. We're seeing a lot of people moving to the Gold Coast, I think, for lifestyle. There's a lot of relative affordability here still, so you can still buy property here that's, you know, superior from a lifestyle point of view than you would get in one of the major capital cities, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane even. So yeah, there's a lot of investment coming from interstate and also internationally.
So Ballarat, one of my favorite cities, actually. I still have my little piece of gold from Ballarat because it's known for the gold. Median house price 2023 was $570,000, which is about 37-38% less than Melbourne. So definitely. You've got the affordability there. It does have quite a lot of stock coming in 2024 onwards, about 453 dwellings and townhouses and units. And that's quite rare in a regional area, which is one of the reasons why we did include it in this report.
Yes, that is also just so nice. You know, 1.5 hours drive to Melbourne, and so many people are moving, aren't they, from Melbourne to get into the property market into Ballarat.
Definitely. And, you know, I know that there's a direct bus as well for people who don't want to drive. I've actually done that bus trip as opposed to driving, and it's a really nice bus trip. So, yeah, it's definitely some of the places that we're seeing now is not just becoming, you know, in the back of people's mind. It's more front forward because of the high cost of living and higher interest rates.
Now, you mentioned Wodonga. Never been. Don't really know too much about Wodonga. But good morning if you are listening to us this morning. It is located in Victoria, bordering New South Wales and located on the southern side of the Murray River. It is around 320 k's away from Melbourne. What can you tell us about Wodonga for our first home buyers?
Well, Wodonga has a median house price of $567,000. Great first year in terms of price growth, 1 year price growth of 4.7%. But what you really want to look at is the 10-year price growth, which is 110.1%. That's the highest 10-year price growth compared to Ballarat and Shepparton. And it also has the lowest vacancy rate of 0.2%. which is really close to zero. That means that you, if you are a first-time investor, then the chances of your property being rented is very, very high and very quick.
All right. So now I've talked about some of these areas that I have not heard of, but the next one I certainly have, Burnie in Tasmania. Now, this is a bustling port city in the northwest of Tasmania. It's got a population these days of over 20,000 people. In fact, I remember Burnie when you could almost count the people on one hand. Maybe that's not quite the case, but it was certainly a lot lower than 20,000 people. So tell us, first home buyers here, moving to Burnie, it looks pretty good, does it, Asti?
It does look pretty good, especially because the median house price for Burnie at $435,000 is about 41% lower than Hobart's median house price. So Hobart's median house price is sitting at about $740,000, whereas Burnie is at $435,000. So definitely much better from an affordability perspective. And if we look at the amount of projects that's going to keep that bustling, you know, growing economy that you talked about, there's about $1.6 billion planned for Burnie. And that is definitely not the norm in Tasmanian regional areas. So this will keep Burnie on the map and it will keep Burnie growing.
Know your property with us on the Real Estate Podcast.
Yeah, I think anybody that hits 55 plus, you start to think about the clock, and certainly over 60, people are really then starting to say, gee, how many more days have I got left on the planet?
Well, that's me because I'm 64 this year. So yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah. Well, last time we were talking about investors coming back into the market. We didn't get an opportunity to talk about just how harder it is to borrow, particularly for first home buyers. If you look at last year, of course, the parameter was moving, the goalposts were moving. It's made a little bit more difficult with the investors coming in to the market. Just how hard is that for first home buyers competing?
I'm not sure that it's as much about competition as it is about the lending criteria and now what you need to be able to buy a property. So, you know, we've seen property prices go up, and we've seen even the cheapest end of the market in our capital cities, somewhere around the 450 to 500,000. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I like to speak empirically because we do work with investors, so we see what they're feeling and doing on an everyday basis. basis. And we used to have investors who'd call us and say, look, I want to buy a property for $350,000. There'd always be one you could buy, and some good ones in growing areas like Perth and Adelaide and some of those larger regional areas. But now if anybody calls and says, you know, $350,000 is my price range as an investor, we normally have to say to them, you're going to have to up that to at least $450,000 to $500,000. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to find anything for you. So that's happened very rapidly. It seems like only yesterday that we were able to move in that $300,000 range for people, and we no longer can. So what that means for first home buyers as well is that they're now needing to have a bigger deposit. You know, for investors, if they've got their own home, they can use the equity as a deposit. They don't have to save up that deposit. But for a first home buyer, they've got to start with a deposit. So now they're looking, especially in our bigger capital cities, at needing a deposit of probably around $150,000 to $200,000 as an absolute minimum. And then on top of that, because interest rates have gone up significantly, and because higher interest rates then create a risk for the lender has subsequently also tightened their lending criteria and how much you're allowed to borrow. It means that you need bigger deposits and higher incomes to be able to afford the cheapest of homes. And this is what's really pricing those first-time buyers out of the market, even more so than the fact that prices have gone up, because they need those bigger deposits and it's much harder for them to save them.
Yeah, it's got that whole trickle-down effect, and just saving $100,000, Margaret, in these times that we live in, very difficult.
And you're not going to get much for if you can only save $100,000. If you're looking at living in Sydney or Melbourne, you're really talking about a unit. $100,000 is probably going to buy you, well, I mean, it's not going to buy you anything without mortgage insurance, because that's only going to give you $400,000 to $500,000. It's only going to buy you a unit with some fairly high mortgage insurance premiums. If you're in Adelaide and Perth, you'll fare a little better. But even so, you know, the prices for homes there in the far northern suburbs in Perth and those southern suburbs in Adelaide has now surpassed the $500,000 and $600,000 mark. So we are talking units really for first home buyers. It feels to me like it was when I was a first home buyer back when in my 20s. We had to start with a unit or a townhouse because we couldn't afford the housing either. I suppose it's similar, although I do appreciate that in combination with the cost of living crisis, it does feel a lot harder now than it ever did. But for investors, if we think about them, first of all, they don't have to save the deposit, because if they've got a home of their own that's grown in value, they've got some equity there and they can leverage against that and essentially put together a 100% loan to buy that investment property. And on top of that, they then get what is a pretty good yield in most areas to be able to declare as additional income to the bank. So they might want to borrow, you know, $600,000. They've got their own income to support that particular loan, but they've also got the rental income to support the loan. And a lot of banks will consider those tax deductions that you get and therefore reduce the tax you pay, which adds to your income again. So in some ways, it's an easier thing for an investor to borrow the same amount as a first home buyer.
Yeah, interesting report. Look, you've got to, I sometimes question the motives of the people who are writing these reports and on behalf of whom they're writing them. But look, no doubt the Perth market can't continue to grow at its current rate forever. But having said that, we don't see any signs of a slowdown at the moment, not in the leading indicators, and certainly not from our boots on the ground perspective. We've seen stock levels drop again since our last conversation. There's now down from about 4,000 to 3,700 properties on the market. Median selling days are still at 8, and our vacancy rate, which sat at about 0.7 for about the last 12 months, just dropped to 0.4. Yeah, so apparently Perth is now ranked as the fourth best city to invest in, which is up from third last year. And that probably tells you all you need to know about this report, the fact that we were ranked third last year but have led the country in growth for the past 2 years, with a third year likely, yet we're languishing in that third and fourth position. And when you dig closer, you look at how they've actually assessed the markets and the different metrics that they've used. And they've only used five metrics to assess the different suburbs that they've put on their list. And some of these suburbs that they've named in Perth, I wouldn't even want to drive through, let alone invest in. So it's a matter of, I think there might be a little bit of East Coast bias in the report, and also just a matter of looking at data alone and not having any knowledge of the local market.
Okay. And I also see that the report is indicating a decline in sales volumes in Perth during the second half of last year. Now, that is suggesting that the market may have peaked. So, interested again in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, look, if you look at the CoreLogic data month to date, I think we've done about 1% growth halfway through the month already. So suggesting that we've peaked is probably a bit off base when we're tracking for 20% plus growth this year. But if you're cherry picking statistics to support a predetermined outcome, then that's probably a good one to utilise. If you look at the sales statistics, they are trending a little bit lower lately. But if you look at also at the stock levels and the fact that there's no stock to buy, it sort of makes sense to me that there would be less transactions in a market where there is less to transact on. If you look at us now at the moment with the amount of transactions we did last week, it was 935, which is higher than the long-term average. This time last year, it was 758. So during that period, stocks dropped 45% and we're doing more transactions. So it's still a little bit baffling to me how they've arrived at these outcomes.
From first-time home buyers to seasoned investors to breaking property news, discover the stories behind the real estate.
So property market in Dickey Beach is quite slow, and only 19 properties have been sold in the past 12 months. Days on the market is just 45 days, and the median house price is about $1.43 million, and there are only 443 active buyers looking to buy in Dickey Beach. And the median unit price in Dickey Beach is about $660,000. Not much stock, and only a few willing to sell, only if they have to sell. If we talk about Camp Hill and Cooperua are next door suburbs, and being in Brisbane, they're performing really, really well. And the median house price in Camp Hill is about $1.56 million. The median house price in Cooperua is about $1.6 million. And the days on the market is 43 days on the market, and about 122 properties have been sold in the past 12 months. Being like quite central to Brisbane City is where a lot of buyers are kind of attracted to buy in Cooperu and Camp Hill.
All right, so let's go from the Sunshine Coast. Let's switch it up a little bit and go into Brisbane this morning. What about Logan Home? What can you tell us in terms of that particular suburb and how it's tracking in 2024?
So, Craig, with Logan Home, this is the suburb that you can start as a new property investor. This is where you can start to build your property investment portfolio, just because of the growth that it has occurred in the last couple of months. And even if we talk about last 12 months, it has grown about 9.8%. And the median house price in Logan Home right now is 670. 12 months ago, it was about 575. So it has grown about like 10%. In just in a year's time, which is quite good. And that tells you how strong the suburb is growing. And the median house price is 670. The days on the market is about 27 days only. 28 houses have been available in the past 12 months. And there are about 2,000 active buyers looking to buy in Logan Home. So Logan Home, again, is performing really, really well as a suburb. And if you're starting as a property investment portfolio, this is a suburb to be in.
We talk to some of the most influential figures in the real estate industry, from leading commentators to investors to real estate principals, only on the Real Estate Podcast.